you are up next. Welcome to the session. Eyal Levy, co-founder of Yogibo, is our guest today.
Hi, how are you doing? Great to be here.
Good, great. Yeah, tell us about Yogibo. What do you do?
So Yogibo started 2009 with a new generation of beanbags, quite different than the beanbags we familiar with. What makes them so unique is that they completely conform to the body with no pressure points. And, you know, it's hard to explain the level of comfort, of course, until you try them. So we started with a line of beanbags. Initially, we thought just selling online and maybe through wholesale. But since the product is so tactile, we figured that in order to be successful, we need to have some, you know, physical demonstration. So we opened our first retail store in 2010, and that actually
Hold on, you're going too fast.
Sure.
How did you come up with this idea of wanting to do bean bags? I mean, there are bean bags in the market. Why did you want to come up with another bean bag product?
Well, actually, I didn't. That wasn't my plan. I was in the high-tech industry before, and then medical equipment. And, you know, it's the whole idea came up when my wife was pregnant, and we were looking for something she can sleep on her belly. And we saw something with a stretchy fabric beanbag, you know, overseas. And, you know, we had, you know, the first one, and my wife had a very comfortable pregnancy. And then after that, it was a piece of very comfortable furniture at our house, and everybody who tried it loved it, and people kept asking us to make them one. So we
Where did you get that one?
I'm sorry?
Where did you find that one? The one that your wife had a wonderful pregnancy on, where was that from?
Yeah, the one that we had was different than the products that we had today, but we found it in Israel when we were originally from.
Okay, so you brought it with you, but you couldn't find that kind of product.
Yeah, we relocated to the U.S. 10 years ago, and we brought it with us, and this is when people kind of like, you know, love the idea of stretchy beanbag. We started to fill them in the basement. You know, we hooked up with a company that makes the fabric. And this was just selling to, you know, friends and people that we know or some events in the area. Back then I was still having my day job, and it was just kind of like a fun thing to do. But the demand increased, and then we decided to take it to the next level.
So, you know, the reason I thought your case study would be interesting for our audience is that we see a lot of e-commerce retail businesses, you know, people who sell, mostly e-commerce companies who sell other people's products. However, there is, over the years in niche e-commerce, I am definitely seeing the trend that people are building their own niche brand that sells their own products. And yours is certainly a brand that you've created selling your own products. So I think this is a, you know, this is an interesting case study for our audience to understand who are thinking of niche e-commerce as the area that they want to go into. So I want to kind of double-click down on the various aspects of getting this business off the ground and then getting some scale and so forth. So you said you started this in your basement. Now, there are a whole bunch of other elements of starting a business in your basement. For one thing, how did you design the product? Who designed the product? Did you copy the product that you saw in Israel? How was that? How did that all come together?
Right. So first of all, my partner who started the business with me, he is a textile engineer. So we had to come up with a different fabric, you know, that would be much more durable and comply with all the regulations here. So we kind of like had to design it, and this is how the first kind of like line of products came about.
Where did you manufacture it?
So the fabrics came from overseas, and the filling the bags and assemble them we did in the basement.
You did it in the basement.
And that was
okay.
Only for the first few months, because after the demand increased, we had to move to another place.
And how much, so there is also the question of startup capital, right? Inventory financing. Since you were doing a physical product, you needed some inventory to get this off the ground with. How much inventory did you arrange for, and how much money did you have to put in to pull that inventory together in your basement?
Yeah, so, I mean, again, this was the first few months, and it was, we used our savings, and so we put about $30,000. That was also to get the website running, you know, for people that, you know, wanted to order online. And then we constantly used the profit that we had to get more working capital and get to the next level.
And how did you get the first orders? Were you selling online first, or were you selling, you said you it's a tactile product and you wanted people to touch and feel. Did you do the store first, or did you do e-commerce first?
No, the e-commerce was the first thing. So we were doing, you know, first events and, you know, selling through to other stores. And then we, and this was just in the area because the supply chain of the product is so complicated. So that would, we were able to do only in our area, something we could deliver ourselves because the product is kind of massive and shipping it is very expensive and kills the margins. Later on, we had to develop a whole, you know, supply chain system and infrastructure to be able to support the growth.
And you're talking, when you're saying your area, you're talking about a suburb of Massachusetts, so a suburb of Boston,
yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
So so how did you build the brand? Talk a little bit about, before we get to the scale, I would like to talk about the supply chain and the logistics of scaling, but let's talk a little bit about the brand, which is how you generated the demand. So tell us how you built the brand.
So building the brand was mostly through a lot of events and partnerships that we created. You know, we participated in a lot of events, you know, music festivals, video game, Comic-Cons. We had great partnerships with TEDx where, you know, we had our products kind of like being the seating option for people to just chill and listen to the talks. And, you know, so that was big marketing component. You know, the other one, of course, is we did a lot of online marketing to support that, but we were able to target the people that had the offline experience and capture them online. So the combination of the offline and online was a winner.
And if you were to say that this brand had a certain reach, you know, through these events and so forth, what would that be? You're saying local, right? You were doing events locally, you were selling locally through local stores. What kind of reach are we talking about?
Well, in the first couple of years, the first year, let's say until we opened our first store, I can estimate that we attended events that about 500,000 people attended.
That's pretty big.
And, yeah.
And so this is something that, you know, for the audience I would like to underscore is that niche brands get built through niche means, you know, whatever it is, wherever you want to position your brand. And in Yael's case, it's a brand that required touching and feeling. So these events allowed the exposure through which he generated this touching and feeling experience for the consumers, and with that they were able to touch 500,000 people. That's not trivial. That's a great start to getting a brand off the ground. So about how you so how many stores then to support this 500,000 people, how many stores are we talking about?
No, that was the first year, that was with probably one store, but it was a lot of hustling. You know, it was a lot of hustling of, you know, going every weekend. You know, I did it myself, you know, so it was like really working 7 days a week and in the weekends going to those events and having, you know, the people that work with me go to other events. New England, especially from May to October, has plenty of events. fairs, music festivals, everything. So it was just making sure we're eating the good ones in each one of
all
them.
All of the good ones, yeah. And the one store that was fulfilling your orders besides the e-commerce was your own store, or was it, were you still selling through other retailers?
No. So, I mean, selling through other retailers was a fairly small portion of the business. We opened our first retail store in one of the upscale malls outside Boston, and it was our own store. And we were able to give the entire experience. And, you know, the beanbag started as the main thing before we opened the store, but then we understood that, you know, just with the beanbags, we can't be successful, and it's just not enough products to support the model. So we developed and designed more products, and we launched more products to kind of like build a whole lifestyle brand around it.
And what kind of price points are we talking?
So our products range from $5 to $500. I mean, our flag product, it retails for $239.
And that's the beanbag?
One of them. That's
one
the,
of
the max,
bag.
Which, yeah, it's kind of like the biggest individual one.
And of the, in the first year of the 500,000 people that you touched through these events, how many converted into paying customers?
Whoa. I would say about 10,000.
10,000.
But
great.
One of the things that you know, with especially with a product like ours, and especially with the big products that we had in the beginning, is that it's not so much of an impulse buying. It's something people try, and they don't always have room space in their house for it. So we had a lot of people like years after said, hey, we saw it like 2 years ago and we loved it, and now we have, you know, the basement, and now we have the space. So it's something that really builds up and needs a lot of patience.
So talk about the complexity in the supply chain. What was complicated about scaling this, and how did you address that?
So first of all, our main products were oversized. You know, in the U.S., everything that has the girth of over 130 inches, considered oversized and has a lot of, you know, or high oversized freight charges.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we ended up, you know, just sending an hour away for end customer with UPS or FedEx, even with deep discount, over $100. So we decided to, in order to be successful and support the online sales, you know, we had to deliver the products ourselves. Nobody would pay, obviously, shipping charge of $100, so it's not something we could charge. So, you know, we took the profit in the beginning, and we actually, you know, bought vans and a truck. So we had drivers, and we could deliver the products ourselves. And that was in the territory that, you know, obviously around us, we couldn't send a van to the West Coast. But we were still sending the rest of the U.S. And, you know, having very small margins.
So the e-commerce business was a Pan-American business.
I'm sorry?
The e-commerce business, you were selling all over the United States, and that's where the margin problem was happening.
Yes. I mean, some people went to those events, you know, visiting New England, and then came home back to the West Coast and did order online, but the majority was from the in the territory where we exhibited the product offline.
So how did you start opening, you know, service centers or warehouses in other parts of the country?
Yeah, later on, not, you know, years after. So we expanded the territories, and in you know, our model is built of territory, which it consists of a warehouse where we store and fill the bags, and also store the rest of the accessories and smaller items, and from there we ship to our stores around and also do the home deliveries.
And what is the, so how long in this, in your cycle of development, did you stay within New England, for instance, that you could service from your one warehouse and delivery network?
That was the first 3.5 years.
And what kind of revenue level did that get you to?
It got us to about $5 million.
$5 million. See, there's a big lesson for those of you who are listening, and especially those of you who may venture into something similar to what Eyal is doing, is that, you know, logistics and focus on a particular regional area for a product that is cumbersome, and we've, you know, we have done case studies of mattress products and, you know, large products that have something custom, something special, something differentiated about it. This is going to be a decision that you're going to have to make. And we constantly see entrepreneurs who have the instinct to want to boil the ocean. They want to sell to the whole world right away, and they don't want to make these trade-offs. But that's a very good way of going out of business. I don't think Eyal's business would be successful without those smart, judicious choices, right?
Yeah, I mean, like every business, it's important to, I mean, beside IP and patent that we applied and beside, I mean, it's important for every business to make it different and to set the entrance barriers. Because without, I mean, our entrance barriers is the complicated supply chain and, of course, the combination of offline and online. And it's something that online resellers, you know, it's for somebody to come up, even if they figure out like ways to pass the IP or things like that, for them to start something like that just online would be extremely difficult. And you know, today I'm meeting with a lot of entrepreneurs and kind of like trying to help as much as I can to people starting online businesses and e-commerce businesses. And you know, we just need to find a way to differentiate and, you know, to set the entrance barrier so they have the value proposition and to have something that is unique and something that other people will be hard for them to compete with.
And in your case, is the entrance barrier entirely the logistics and the delivery network, or is there product level differentiation that you have also used to compete?
The product level, definitely. I mean, we were getting a lot of requests from distributors all over the world, and we didn't talk about it, but we did open distribution overseas. And for potential distributors that are interested in just selling the beanbags, I'm telling them, you know, you're wasting your time because it's not enough to make money in the model. You need to have all this line of product in order to make it profitable and be successful. So, yeah, the line of product is definitely the technology that is, you know, very hard, and we invested a lot in it. You know, that's another.
What is in the line of product? Besides the beanbags, what else do you have?
Oh, so today we have about 1,000 SKUs, and, you know, we're launching 200 more SKUs. So, after the beanbag, we expanded into more comfort product that each one of them is unique and is different than any other product in the market. So whether it's unique travel pillows that have advantages or laptop tray and tablet pillows and meditation pillows that are all unique, and then we expanded to more other comfort products like blanket that is, you know, very different, all seasonal blanket, and now sleeping pillows. And now we're getting into a whole section of lifestyle with fashion accessories that are unique and other different home decor products.
And so you said in 3.5 years you got to about $5 million. What is the rest of the growth trajectory of the business? What kind of growth and what kind of level of revenue have you traversed?
So, we expanded, obviously, with online, you know, the business expanded. So we invested in better e-commerce technologies and selling through a couple of online resellers. you know, we then expanded internationally to other countries like Japan and Korea and Canada. Right now we're launching our franchising program next mm-hmm. month. And mm-hmm. to kind of like duplicate the model as it proved to be successful in the East Coast or East Coast, Northeast and Mid-Atlantic to other territories of the country. So we've been building the franchising program and provide the franchising for an entire territory, not just for stores, but the stores online and the entire model. So this is what we're basing the growth on, and also expanding the continue to launch more products and increase revenues with the existing channels that we already have.
How many years has it been that you've been in business now?
I'm sorry, how many?
Years has it been? When did you found
years?
The company?
Yeah, so 2009. It's going to be in July. It's going to be 8 years.
8 years. And how? Where are you revenue-wise at this point?
We're approaching, $20 million this year.
That's fantastic. And all organic growth? Did you take any financing?
We did a little bit of financing, a little bit of equity, a little bit of mezzanine loan.
And do you use bank loans for the inventory?
Yeah, we use line of credit for the working capital.
Yeah. And what would that amount to? How much equity financing do you have in the company, and how much, if you're saying little bit, what does little bit mean?
It's not something I can share. It's some confidentiality, so it's not something I can share. I'm sorry.
So what we are trying to understand, you can answer it whatever way you can and are willing to. We're trying to understand is, you know, is this a capital efficient business? Is this, you know, anything that can be inventory finance and you get to a level of, stability in the business and enough transactions such that banks or inventory financing companies are willing to lend you that money and that line of credit are actually easier to scale. But to get there, you kind of need some amount of financing, either that is your own financing, friends and family financing, whatever, equity financing, debt, whatever. That's the part that we are trying to understand is how did you finance that part that got you to the financials based on which you can start the bank financing flowing.
Sure. So I think, you know, in our business, like other stages of business, any business that starts and, you know, at least in the U.S. will go to the bank, to ask for a line of credit, probably most likely the answer will be no, because it takes few years of profitability to get to that level.
So
the cycle of us was, we started, used all of our savings to get to the level of that we can, you know, finance the inventory and get the ball rolling, have a very basic e-commerce website that I built myself with a designer. And once that got going, in the first couple of years, I barely took salaries and used all my saving and working, at least 80 hours a week to save payroll and put all the profits back to the business and create more working capital. And then, it depends. For us, when we needed more money is when we decided to open the first store, because that's something that required capital. Not just working capital, but capital of renovating the store or deposit or whatever it is. So we used some, seed money, a couple of hundred thousand to be able to do that. And for years, we were just taking, putting all the profits, running very, very lean, and putting all the profits back to the business until we show at least two years of profitability that we got the line of credit from the bank to support, line of credit normally is, 50 or 60% of inventory, continue to grow that, increase the profitability, and then we're able to get to, mezzanine loans that, normally mezzanine loan, we're talking about like $1 million.
Yeah, so that's, by the way, the key points that you need to manage from a cash flow point of view is to get yourself to a level in e-commerce in particular where you can work with banks, and that really gives you a lot of leverage. If you can get to a financial, you know, a P&L and a track record based on which banks are willing to now partner with you and give you lines of credit, that's one of the key points of an e-commerce business, and it sounds like it took you a couple of years to get there.
Yeah, and the first 2 years are so crucial. Run as lean as you can, make it profitable as fast as you can for 2 years so you can show the bank, build a relationship with the bank, build collateral if you can, of course, other than inventory, and, you know, to support that securities that the banks that run so conservatively need.
So now, last question, Eyal. Where do you want to go now? You have $20 million, approaching $20 million in revenue. What are you thinking? You know, the companies at your stage have a lot of options. You could take private equity financing. You could sell the company to private equity. You could, you know, there are all sorts of options. What is your desire at this point?
The desire is continue to grow the business and to expand it to other territories. And to expand the line, I love what I do. Whether we will need more financing, it really depends on the future. Right now, we're building a strategy that we won't need much financing unless other opportunities come up, or the market will change. But that's kind of like the overall strategy, continue to expand and get to other markets internationally and domestically.
Do you need liquidity personally, or do your investors, the equity investors, do they need or want liquidity?
It's a good question.
Because you do have the option of taking partial liquidity with a private equity firm at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we will. Right now, we're focusing until like next year to get the profitability to the next level, and then we'll have the options open, so it's something we can be open for. But right now, we're focusing on, at this point until next year, we're focusing on building the business and expanding.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for sharing your story. And we're going to move to the next segment of the business. Folks, if anybody actually want to use public chat to ask questions of Eyal, please go ahead. This is a, you know, now is a very good time to ask questions. We're going to do other things in this session, but while Eyal is still on the call, if you have questions, you should go ahead and ask him. Anybody? Yeah, do you want to add anything to what you said? Do you have any message that you want to convey to this group?
Yeah, I just, you know, anybody who started a business, I mean, need to be ready for a lot of sacrifices. You know, when I'm being asked, you know, how is it to start your own business and to scale it up, I'm always saying it's like running a marathon in a sprint pace. And, you know, just be ready for a lot of sacrifices. And try to stay as lean as you can until you make it profitable, and until you make the tipping point. Think out of the box, create your entrance barriers, you know, and think different. Think of things that, you know, others can do.
Great. So we're going to thank you very much for sharing
the
story.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to move to the next segment. You're very welcome.